Penguin Random House Audio presents Confessions of a Secular Jesus Follower, Finding Answers in Jesus for Those Who Don't Believe. This is the author, Tom Krottenmaker. To my mother, Seal, for giving me the gift of determination and perseverance, without which no books would ever be written. Introduction. During my mountain climbing days, I came to appreciate the value of ropes, and especially anchors. When the climb team must negotiate a steep, slippery pitch, where falls are both possible and highly damaging to one's prospects for survival, a fixed line is laid. Each climber latches onto that life-saving rope by means of a sliding knot at the end of a short rope that's attached to his or her harness. That knot slides easily as you push it up with your hand over and over, while you carefully ascend on the snowy slope or rock face. But that knot can grab and hold the fixed line, that lifeline, like bulldog jaws, when subjected to the kind of sudden downward jerk that happens when a climber starts to fall. Those Prusik knots work amazingly well if you tie them right. But even then, the fixed rope has to be secured by an anchor that will not suddenly break loose, that will hold firm in the critical moment you hope will never come. A massive, unmovable rock is ideal, one with a shape that makes it impossible for the looped rope to slide up and off. Climb leaders set up anchors very carefully. They go to great lengths to choose a dependable rock. Team members are going to be committing their lives to it, after all. The anchor had damn well better not fail. It's sort of like that in our everyday lives down here in our cities and towns, I've come to see. If or when we finally get around to choosing an anchor on which we are going to bet our lives, if or when we decide to climb for something higher than narrow self-interest, higher than me, me, me. The concept is not an easy sell in our do-your-own-thing culture, in the midst of a postmodern zeitgeist that tells us there is no fixed line or immovable anchor, that there is no ultimate truth. Even if that's true, even if everything is relative, there is value, I have seen, in going all in on a principle and commitment as if it is the final word. No exclusivist, I'm not going to claim there is only one trustworthy anchor out there. As we all know, many, many people make God belief their rock. People I respect, even though it's a leap I am unable to make myself. I know people who have found a worthy anchor in Judaism or Islam, or in Buddhism or Hinduism, or other non-Western religions. As a non-religious person, I have felt inspired by ethically driven seculars who build their lives around serving their communities and working for a more just and equitable world. I've been moved by a good-hearted atheist testifying to the life-changing value she has derived from treating Jane Eyre as her sacred text. All of these I respect, and I am open to the value of many other sources of uplift and inspiration. I do not, however, accept that pretty much anything will suffice as our ultimate anchor and our basis for a life of substance. Buying stuff, which often seems our culture's preferred approach, certainly won't. On the mountains I've climbed, figuratively speaking, I've discovered, and then rediscovered again and again, the anchor that means the most to me, the anchor I find most worthy of my trust. It's the ethic and the inspiration, and indeed the way, of an ancient figure with whom we are acquainted, but whose relevance to our lives and society might not be so readily apparent, and whose availability to us, if we are secular, might come as a complete surprise. He's the figure you've seen in photos towering over Rio de Janeiro, or looking out at you with pale blue eyes from the sentimental popular paintings that used to be common in America, or hanging in agony on the crucifixes found in many Catholic churches. Familiar though he is, you probably haven't thought about him in the way that we are going to in the conversation that follows. Let me explain what I mean and the context in which I mean it. We live, for worse and for better, in a secular age. Even the religiously devout, with their acceptance of practical science and their non-reliance on the supernatural to navigate and understand the objective world before them, the cause of the common cold, the sources of lightning and earthquakes, the position of the earth and us in the vast universe, assent to secular terms of engagement in ways their faithful predecessors from centuries and millennia past would scarcely recognize. Whatever our religious persuasion, we have little choice in the matter. Because of the timing of our births and the culture in which we live, we all inhabit an age and space that emphasize science, technology, and rational evidence-based persuasion and decision-making, while casting reflexive suspicion upon the supernatural. Here in the Western world, we all live in a context where our worldviews and frames of reference are matters of our choice, where religious non-belief is an option, an increasingly viable one judging from the demographic data, and where religious belief in some settings and circles more than others is hard to muster. It's not surprising then to find growing numbers of people in the United States and other Western cultures who are secular through and through. No God, no church, no community built around religious values and commitments. In these outward expanding secular spheres, a real-life experiment unfolds. Where there was once reliance on God belief and the structures that grow out of that, there is now an iterative and earnest collective effort to figure out how to do life naked, to borrow a term from Richard Neuhaus. In his seminal work, The Naked Public Square, published in 1986, Neuhaus lamented a public square increasingly shorn of religion. 3 decades later, a broader unanswered question hangs over us, posed by the rapidly growing legions who would keep religion separate not only from politics and government, but from our lives. More and more of us are experiencing the ups and downs and triumphs and devastations of human existence, the births and deaths and all the major milestones in between, with no religion to lean on, with no divinely ordered structure to hold us. We face our mortality and all the other vexing mysteries of life naked. What happens now to society and us? Despite shrill warnings about the nihilism to which secular living supposedly must lead, despite the claims that without God people are doomed to living life with no notion of right and wrong and good and bad, why not just kill for sport? Most of us in this wildly diverse collection of non-religious, non-theistic individuals are managing fine, more or less. We are demonstrating every day that godlessness does not lead to the horrors that alarmist religion promoters warn about. We are, for the most part, people who enjoy our lives. We are, by and large, and imperfectly, good citizens who tend to our responsibilities, take care of our kids, love our spouses and parents, and try to make the world a fairer and better place. By doing all this with our eyes open to our mortality, and while harboring no sweet notion of heaven to console us, we are disproving that seculars crumble under the vast weight of supposed nothingness. We are proving, as the pithy slogan of the American Humanist Association puts it, that people and life can be good without a God. Sorry, Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty fame. The reality is worlds different from the picture you paint of an atheist family being murdered and tortured and having no basis to object, because, after all, with no God, they have no standard of right and wrong. Sorry, those who agree with John Kasich, who alleged during his 2015 presidential campaign that our country's migration away from traditional religion is robbing us of our morals and values. The reality on the ground shows us that while morality is, yes, changing, it is still there, and the runaway hedonism with which you associate secularity is not materializing. Sorry, drama kings and queens. The mortality that we perceive and accept does not have us secular people enduring daily head-in-hands agony. Judging by the prospective lyrics of one of our decade's best indie rock bands, the secular response to our impending demise appears to combine nonchalance with a stiff upper lip. If we are not already dead, we are on our way there, Metric notes in Dreams So Real. So, shut up and carry on. The scream becomes a yawn. The truth about our secular lives is more complex, prosaic, and maybe even boring than the doomsayers would have us believe. If there is a problem to be discerned in the growing secularity of our time, this is where it's likely to be found. To use a term from the philosopher Charles Taylor, it's in the flatness that we experience as people who perceive and experience no supernatural charge in our world and surroundings. In the words of the philosophers Hubert Dreyfus and Sean Dorrance Kelly, our technological world, when compared against the divinely infused Age of Old.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?